Last week on January 24th, the Canadian government met with First Nations leaders on what was being billed as an historic summit, a first of its kind, what was being called a chance to hit the reset button on relations between the Crown and First Nations peoples. On the line with us tonight to discuss the results of the summit is Arthur Manuel, a member of the Sekwapmek Nation in South Central Interior, British Columbia. I know he can probably correct the pronunciation for that, Ami. My apologies. He served as chief of the Nisqually Indian Band for 8 years and as chairperson for the Shuswap Nation Tribal Council for 7 years. He also headed the Interior Alliance and currently serves as a volunteer chairperson for the Indigenous Network on Economies and Trade and is also part of the Defenders of the Land Network. Arthur, thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight.
Hello.
Hi. Can you, just to correct me, can you pronounce the First Nation you belong to for us?
Sekwapmek Nation.
Thank you, sir. Sorry about that. You know, Arthur, there was a lot of anticipation in the lead up to last week's First Nation Crown Summit, particularly in light of the situation that was exposed in the media, or that the media gave attention to in Attawapiskat, a situation shared by many reserves, if not most reserves. Many were saying that this was an opportunity to, reset relations. I found this a really interesting choice of words, given the connotation that reset often has between nations traditionally at war or with strained diplomatic tensions. You know, before you give us an account, and maybe some of your thoughts on that summit, maybe you can just briefly outline for us how you viewed the problems going into this summit to begin with.
Well, I think the biggest problem we have is that the federal and the provincial governments do not recognize the Aboriginal and treaty rights of Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And that, recognition of the, I guess, the proprietary or the ownership of the land by way of these being here, the fact that we were here first, and that generates this Aboriginal treaty interest that we have as Indigenous people, and the government, regardless of whether it's a Harper government or a Paul Martin government or a Trudeau government, or even Deef the Chief, doesn't really make a difference. All of these guys were always putting themselves as having mutual and exclusive 100% power over all Aboriginal title territories. And they've always been trying to extinguish our land rights. That's always been a very deep-seated cause of our own people to fight against that. But that's generally the way I sort of see the big picture problem.
Now, from the surface, non-Aboriginal, Canadians and settlers, recent Canadians, newer migrants to this country, looking at the surface at the results of this summit, maybe saying to themselves, well, wasn't, one of the announced results was that First Nations people would be given more autonomy over their land to develop it and to do what they will with it. When you scratch behind the surface, there's this seems to be, in fact, the exact opposite of what the results of the summit will lead to, the implications. Can you tell us a little bit about the results of the summit?
Well, I think one of the problems that I guess the conservative government's agenda is that they have been following, Manny Jules' idea about converting land to fee simple under the auspices, basically, of the federal and provincial sort of proprietary or property rights kind of regime. But remember, looking at really the real fundamental problem is that Canada and the provinces are built on Aboriginal and treaty territories.
Yeah.
And that's an underlying title that exists under every square inch of this country. And the thing is that it's greater than the Crown interests, and it's greater than any of the property rights created either by the federal or the provincial government, whether it be in the form of fee simple or it be in form of timber rights, mineral rights, fishery rights, or whatever other kinds of rights these people talk about. All of those property rights rest on Crown interest, and Crown interest if it's an interest, rests on Aboriginal tree interests. So the underlying title is our interest. So that's the fundamental proprietary interest. You know, if Indian people want to create some form of individual proprietary ownership based on their title and rights, they shouldn't be creating them at the expense of extinguishing that underlying title. That's generally the way the government is trying to promote it through the present logic. Yeah.
It seems equivalent. I mean, I know people don't, but they should. Most people don't, but they should view First Nations entitlement to this land in terms of autonomy and self-determination, just like we would view, you know, nations all around the world in those terms. This seems equivalent to, for example, saying some elites in Nigeria working with the World Bank, or maybe with Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, you know, saying that they have autonomy over their oil fields because they have the right to sell it, you know, to corporations at the expense of the vast majority of the people who don't receive the benefits of those sales.
Well, I think one of the things is pretty clear is that the grassroots Indians, whether they be in Aboriginal or Cree territories, the grassroots person does have what you call, you know, the underlying interest or the rightful title holder, whatever kind of language you want to use. Yeah. To their territory, and they have to be very strong. I think one of the things that clearly shows the dynamics that Harper's playing with when he's dealing with Native interests is the Enbridge pipeline. You know, when you talk about the tar sands and you talk about the pipeline, you're talking about basically the heart of the Canadian energy and the Canadian economic policies, you know. And Indian people and Indigenous people do play a role, and just take a look what happened to Elmer Derrick when he said that he signed a deal with Enbridge saying that the Gitxsan Nation supported Enbridge. You the people just banded together and made it very clear that Elmer Derrick didn't speak on their behalf, which means that Native people do have a say on fundamental issues that have to do with the Canadian economy, the Canadian energy policies of this country. And we have to realize that with that comes the responsibility that we ourselves need to make our own decisions on what we want to deal with in terms of energy, in terms of what is economics, in terms of based on our title and rights. You know, those are things that I think, you know, Native people have to take some initiative there, you know.
So, you know, defending the inextinguishability of those treaty rights is not the same as giving reserves, you know, the power of municipalities to chop up and sell their land then.
Well, you know, like this whole question that the government is pushing, you know, this whole Indian land claims policy, that the comprehensive land claims policy and the self-government policy, all of those things are based on this sort of old notion of land selection process where we sort of pick an Indian reserve and we give up and extinguish our land rights to all the rest of our land. That kind of process of cede, surrender, and release has been condemned by the international community. The last people that signed a cede, surrender, and release agreement was basically the James Bay Cree of Quebec in 1975 or something. They signed their agreement. You know, Billy Diamond and those guys were the last one. After that, the United Nations condemned that approach, and that's where Canada has come up with these facetious and tricking kind of strategies called the Modified Rights Model and the Non-Assertion Model. They basically do the same thing as a cede, surrender, and release, but you just don't use the word. But, you know, that is the strategy that they're pushing, where they're trying to protect the, I guess, what they call the mutual exclusive jurisdiction of Section 91, which is federal power, Section 92, which is the provincial power, protect those powers to govern over Aboriginal and treaty lands, and they want us to agree to that. And what do we get? We get these little Indian reserves that we pick. I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, we should be able to have our own communities. We might want to call them Indian reserves. We might not want to call them whatever we want, but areas that are are totally within our sovereign and control as indigenous people. And then in the other areas, we still have underlying interests in that way. We have ongoing power with relationship to deciding, along with other governments, access and benefits with regard to those lands and resources. But those will be, you know, things that we would negotiate. But we would never give up. We will never extinguish those Aboriginal treaty rights that are the basis of that interest. So that's where we look at it a little bit different than what the government's doing. But Indian people have to reject this whole land selection process, this Indian reserve process, and get into a process that totally deals with full recognition, like it says in the Constitution, with the federal and provincial government need to recognize existing Aboriginal and treaty rights throughout our territory, you know, never extinguished. So they're caught in a position where they can't even extinguish it now. So the real issue is, you know, I was a little bit nervous about this meeting when the Prime Minister was talking about just doing the ceremony and running off, you know.
That
would be totally economic and energy irresponsible of this guy, you know, who's calling himself the Prime Minister of these lands. With this, what has to happen is that they need to take it a little more seriously. He did sit through, I hear, a lot more of the sessions than he originally was planning to do, you know, so I don't know who gave him a wake-up pill on that, you know. But he sort of seems to, but there has to be some dialogue there, you know.
Well, I think, you know, non-Aboriginal Canadians, at least more and more, are waking up to the reality that this government, and not so different from Liberal governments and in some cases even NDP governments, you know, are very committed to serving the more elite, the richer in our society. And, of course, what this means when it pertains to the struggles or the situation of Aboriginal peoples in this country is that kind of corporate, you know, surrendering everything to corporations and capital would means the extinguishment of indigenous peoples as nations based on the, you know, the elimination of their land base. You raised the fee simple process being pushed by Manny Jewells. I would direct our listeners who want to learn a little bit more about that. I read some good articles from Russell Diabo in the First Nations Strategic Bulletin a little while back. People can look that up. You know, as a final question, Arthur, I'm wondering, you know, like, there are some First Nations leaders who are pushing these sorts of processes, fee simple, for example, and many which are opposed. And many Canadians are perhaps not aware of this contradiction between the traditional government structures in First Nations Indigenous communities and those that are imposed by Canada under the Indian Act and under what they're now calling the Ministry of Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development. Very interesting that both those phrases are in the same ministry's name. But you know, I was wondering if you would be able to speak to some of the contradictions created and the types of leadership created in Indigenous communities based on these structures that the Canadian government, which a colonizing government, has imposed on First Nations people.
Well, I think they basically, like, I was an elected chief for 8 years.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the things is that elected chiefs have, you know, certain powers and certain interests. But they're totally centered around the Indian Reserve, the existing Indian Reserve. They don't stretch out into the traditional territory. Uh-huh. The traditional territory has to be governed through the structures that Indigenous people engaged in over the centuries before the non-Native people were here. The families, in many cases, had large areas that they were responsible for. You know, people have to reassume those responsibilities. They have to get out on their land. They have to mutually support each other in exercising their rights and jurisdiction out there. Mm-hmm. And we need to be very careful not to get sucked into this, you know, jobs and business opportunities.
Yeah.
Agenda that is somewhat along the same lines as the fee simple agenda. It's always how do you fit into the existing economic structure that's being imposed by the settler society? You know, that's what the fee simple is, but also jobs and opportunity, because you wind up with a lot of middlemen. You know, like Phil Fontaine and those guys are representing the Royal Bank of Canada, stuff like that. Yeah. And what they are really is middlemen between big company, big government, and what they're trying to do is get Native people to joint venture up under the existing 91, 92 economies, instead of trying to build Indigenous economies based on Section basically 35, when I try to talk about it in a constitutional sense, you know what I mean? Where you're talking about Aboriginal-based economies, you know, based on the fact that you own the underlying title to your whole territory, and you should have recognized prior informed consent with regard to access and benefits. That's where you build your own government over your territory, as opposed to the other way where you sign a joint venture where you agree that the Minister of Mines is responsible for diamonds and for gold and all this kind of stuff, and then you agree that through signing this that you're going to subjugate your nation, whether it be the Cree Nation or the Squamish Nation or whatever. You're going to subject that nation to 91, 92 economies based on the legislation, whether it be forestry, minerals, or highways, or whatever, based on the mainstream economy. So, you know, that middleman kind of politics, you need to be very cautious, because I know that's what Harper and those guys are pushing, you know.
Given this middleman politics, you're talking about these go-betweens who are Indigenous but who are really serving the interests of the Royal Bank, as in the case of Phil Fontaine, former head of the Assembly of First Nations. Given that, what legitimacy did this previous summit have in your eyes?
Well, I think one of the things is that there has to be, some dialogue. You need to make some effort to tell the system exactly what you want and to see what happens. Like I deal a lot on the international level, like right now where we've submitted a third shadow report. That's the Committee for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. They'll be meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, and reviewing Canada's record on the 22nd, 23rd. And one of the things that the international community asks me when I'm traveling abroad and I'm making arguments about what Canada's doing, they say, well, did you tell Canada?
Yeah.
You know? So you need to sit across from the guy and you need to tell him. And so that's what the statement is that the AFN laid there. And that's what you need to take a look at and say, did they accurately reflect what we feel as Indigenous nations? And did they articulate the problem? Well, if Harper looks at this thing and throws it in the garbage, that's his problem, you know? But that means that we've actually went and said something to this guy. We put him, we told him face-to-face, and I think that's important, you know? And that's one thing Sean did. So.
Well, look, so putting the future struggles, the future, of First Nations peoples at the initiative of the peoples themselves, how do you view the way forward? You know, if First Nations people stand up and assert themselves, what do you think must be done here to actually achieve what needs to be achieved?
Well, I think one of the things is that we need to support, you know, the people dealing with the Enbridge pipeline. You know, we need to support people like Marilyn Baptiste here, who is fighting against that Fish Lake mines. These are very critical issues that involve the federal government, you know. And we have to resist and stand up against those resources. And there are people at the community level, and we need to network, we need to be educated, we need to understand and not get sucked into some of these middlemen strategies. Yeah. You know, we not get sucked into this sort of fee simple stuff. We need to be articulate about that. We need to educate our own people, about what our rights are as Indigenous people, what self-determination means. Self-determination basically means that we have the real political will and desire to tell the international community, to tell the business community, to tell Canada that we are the ones that will make these decisions. You know, we put in place and we basically beat Canada on the constitutional issue, and so 35-1 was there in BC. We beat them when we won the Delgamuukw case. We beat them on the UN declaration stuff. You know, we've won every which way. Every time they get into a fight with us, they come out on the bottom. Yet they still are holding on with their fingernails right now trying to maintain that 91-92 federal provincial power over Aboriginal title lands. No, we need to get together and we need to stop that. And we want it every other front. It really requires a refocus of our attention and a real push, especially on some of these really tough issues that are coming up right now.
Arthur, that's all the time that we have for today, but I thank you very much for being on the show here with Radio Basics. Maybe we hope to bring you on in the future to continue discussing these issues, as a people's organization, media organization, but as a people's organization ourselves, obviously the struggles of Indigenous peoples for self-determination against this common enemy, Canadian imperialism and colonialism is very important to us. So thank you very much for being on the line with us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Good night.
All right, Christian, bye.
That was Arthur Manuel, a member of the Sekwapmik First Nation in South Central Interior of the British Columbia.